avoids tasks requiring sustained mental effort. Adults with ADHD, 81%. Adults in the community, 2%. Loses necessary things. Adults with ADHD, 75%. Adults in the community, 11%. Easily distracted by extraneous stimuli. Adults with ADHD, 97%. Adults in the community, 2%. Forgetful in daily activities. Adults with ADHD, 78%. Adults in the community, 4%. Hyperactive, impulsive symptoms. Fidgets with hands or feet, or squirms in seat. Adults with ADHD, 79%. Adults in the community, 4%. Leaves seat when required to stay seated. Adults with ADHD, 30%. Adults in the community, 2%. Feels restless. Adults with ADHD, 77%. Adults in the community, 3%. Difficulty doing leisure activities quietly. Adults with ADHD, 38%. Adults in the community, 3%. As to be on the go. Adults with ADHD, 62%. Adults in the community, 12%. Talks excessively. Adults with ADHD, 44%. Adults in the community, 4%. Blurts out answers. Adults with ADHD, 57%. Adults in the community, 7%. Difficulty awaiting turn. Adults with ADHD, 67%. Adults in the community, 3%. Interrupts or intrudes on others. Adults with ADHD, 57%. Adults in the community, 3%. ADHD versus typical adults. Fewer than 5% of the typical adults answered yes to all but two of these questions. Fewer than 12% did so for the other two questions. On average, adults in the general population control group reported less than one symptom out of all 18, whereas adults with ADHD reported more than 12, 7 on the inattention list, and 5 on the hyperactive impulsive list. Clearly, the vast majority of typical adults do not report having these problems often. There is a quantifiable, statistically significant, and noticeable difference between the experiences of those diagnosed with ADHD and others. In the same study, we asked adults with ADHD and those in the community population in what domains of life they were often impaired by ADHD symptoms. The results we got are given here. Domain of life. Home life. Adults with ADHD, 69%. Adults in the community, 2%. Work or occupation. Adults with ADHD, 75%. Adults in the community, 2%. Social interactions. Adults with ADHD, 56%. Adults in the community, 1%. Community activities. Adults with ADHD, 44%. Adults in the community, 1%. Educational activities. Adults with ADHD, 89%. Adults in the community, 1%. Dating or marital activities. Adults with ADHD, 73%. Adults in the community, 1%. Money management. Adults with ADHD, 73%. Adults in the community, 1%. Driving. Adults with ADHD, 38%. Adults in the community, 2%. Leisure activities. Adults with ADHD, 46%. Adults in the community, 1%. Daily responsibilities. Adults with ADHD, 86%. Adults in the community, 2%. For every one of these major life activities, more of the adults with ADHD reported being impaired than did the adults in the general population. In most areas, a substantial majority reported that they were often impaired. The same people who claim that so-called ADHD symptoms are problems that all adults have often claim that these symptoms and impairments are even more pronounced and prevalent in normal children than normal adults. ADHD is not a disorder, they say, but just a set of problems widely experienced by the general population, especially in childhood. Not so, our study showed. When you don't quite fit the picture of ADHD, the professional who evaluates you may tell you that you seem to have a particular subtype of ADHD, but that he or she is not sure. Currently, DSM-5 divides ADHD into three subtypes. 1. Predominantly hyperactive. 2. Predominantly inattentive. 3. Combined. The trouble is, this subdivision sometimes muddies the diagnostic waters, because the groups overlap and may represent a range of severity rather than three distinct types. So it's not likely to continue into the next edition, due out in 2013. The three subtypes of ADHD as of 2010. The combined type is the most common, approximately 65% or more of clinical cases, and severe, and involves all the characteristics noted in the 18 DSM criteria. It's also the most extensively studied of the types of ADHD, with thousands of scientific studies on this group published over the last 100 years. The predominantly hyperactive type was recognized in 1994. People with this type of ADHD don't have sufficient problems with inattentiveness to be diagnosed with the combined type. It shows up mainly as difficulties with impulsive and hyperactive behavior. It's now believed to represent simply an early developmental stage of the combined type in most cases. As many as 90% of these people will develop enough problems with attention and distractibility to be diagnosed with the combined type within 3 to 5 years. The remaining cases appear to mostly represent a milder variant of the combined type. Individuals who exhibit chiefly attention problems, but not excessive activity levels or poor impulse control, are considered to have the predominantly inattentive type of ADHD. First recognized around 1980, this subtype makes up about 30% or more of clinically referred cases. Many of these cases are just milder forms of the combined type. To confuse matters further, 30 to 50% of those who seem to have the predominantly inattentive type of ADHD may not have ADHD at all, but something that some researchers, including me, now call a sluggish cognitive tempo, SCT, or separate disorder of a different type of attention. Do you think you might have the following tendencies, some of which seem like the opposite of ADHD? Daydreaming. Being spacey. Staring frequently. Being slow-moving, hypoactive, lethargic, and sluggish. Being easily confused or mentally foggy. Being slow to process information and prone to making mistakes in doing so. Having a poor focus of attention or being unable to distinguish what is important from what is not in information that has to be processed quickly. Having more problems consistently remembering information that was previously learned. Being more socially reticent, shy, or withdrawn than others. Being more passive, or even hesitant, instead of being impulsive, like the more typical combined type of ADHD. Having a different pattern of other disorders that sometimes coexist with ADHD, such as rarely showing social aggression, known as oppositional defiant disorder. Less likely to be antisocial or have conduct disorder, frequent lying, stealing, fighting, etc. more likely to be anxious and possibly depressed. Impaired schoolwork due to making errors rather than reduced productivity. If this pattern seems like it might fit you, ask the professional who evaluated you. So little is known scientifically about this syndrome, whether it's another subtype of ADHD or an entirely different disorder of attention, that it won't be discussed further in this book. What if you still disagree with the professional's conclusions? You've now heard all about ADHD and how it's diagnosed. Maybe you've received a diagnosis yourself. Are you ready to own this disorder? It's the only way to seek appropriate treatment and get on with the kind of life you want and deserve. When is a second opinion warranted? If you find yourself disagreeing with the results of your first evaluation, ask yourself honestly whether you disagree because your professional did such a poor or cursory job evaluating you, or concluded things about your behavior that you know are simply not true. If so, you should seek a second opinion. But even if the evaluation was done responsibly and well, and the feedback you were given sounds like it describes you, you may disagree with the label. The problem may be your preconceived notions or your own attempts at self-diagnosis. Sometimes people seek professional evaluations, believing they have a particular disorder, such as bipolar disorder, only to be told by the professional that what they really have is ADHD. When the professional's diagnosis conflicts with what they originally believed, it can be hard to accept. In a case like this, you can surely seek a second opinion. But know that you're not likely to be satisfied with that one either, because it will again disagree with your self-diagnosis. Second opinions are reasonable to pursue as long as you have solid, rational grounds on which to question the initial evaluation and disagree with its conclusions. A final reality check. If you've received the diagnosis of ADHD, but are not quite ready to own the disorder, take a look at these fast facts. You're not alone. ADHD occurs in approximately 5 to 8% of the childhood population, and 4 to 5% of adults. In childhood, it is 3 times more common in boys than girls. But by adulthood, the ratio of males to females is approximately 2 to 1 or less. The disorder is found in all countries and ethnic groups studied to date. ADHD is somewhat more common in urban and population-dense regions than in suburban or rural settings, and is found across all social classes and in all ethnic groups. Being among this group is not necessarily devastating news. There's a lot of help available, but that help requires that you acknowledge, accept, and otherwise own the diagnosis of ADHD as being a part of who you are. Otherwise, you'll be far less committed to seeking appropriate treatment or to following through on the advice you get from professionals. Ready to start getting that help? What if the professional says you don't have ADHD, but you believe you do? There's a funny thing about ADHD, perhaps because its impact on achievement is so well known. Many people blame the disorder when they don't meet their own standards for accomplishment. Do any of these people sound like you? Joe decided to become a doctor when he was in high school, so he chose a college with a great biology department and a high rate of admission to medical schools. He got into that university only on the waiting list, but at least he got in. Once he was there, though, every science course was a struggle for him. By junior year, his GPA was hovering under a 3.0, and he had already taken organic chemistry 3 times without passing. Joe started to wonder what in the world was wrong with him. He worked so hard. He wanted this so badly, and he was just as intelligent as the next guy, wasn't he? By the time Joe had graduated from college and taken the MCAT with disappointing results, he was convinced there was something really wrong with him. An awful lot of his fellow students seemed to have glided along the path that Joe had carved out for himself, yet he was stalled. It was looking like he might never get into medical school. So Joe decided to have himself evaluated for ADHD. The more he read about it, the more he thought this explained his whole problem. The evaluator disagreed. So did the one from whom Joe sought a second opinion, and the third. Carrie fell into a similar trap. Identified as gifted when young, she had been brought up to believe that she should be gifted in doing just about everything in life. When Carrie started hopping from one type of job to another after college, she and her family decided she might have ADHD, which was the only explanation they could come up with for why she kept failing at jobs that should, according to her IQ, be a snap for her. As it turned out, ADHD wasn't the problem, but anxiety was. Carrie didn't like to admit that she found herself almost paralyzed by fear when she started a new job, and that this made it really hard for her to concentrate on her work. Fortunately, the evaluator from whom she sought a diagnosis of ADHD discovered the real problem and was able to refer her to a therapist who specialized in anxiety disorders. This therapist not only offered treatment and coping strategies, but helped Carrie accept her diagnosis without shame. Cal didn't have any particular reason, such as an IQ score or comparison to a peer group, for believing that he had ADHD, and that's why he was stuck in a dead-end job and had very few friends and no girlfriend. He just believed his life should be different and had apparently cast around over the years for an explanation for why it wasn't. My colleagues and I have seen numerous people like Cal, who simply feel that if they're not getting what they want out of life, there must be some psychological deficit at work. None of us can explain this phenomenon. It's almost the opposite of the TV singing contest shows, where the contestant clearly can't stay on key, and yet believes rigidly that he's destined for vocal stardom. In this case, the person believes he cannot perform well in life, when in fact he does perform as well as most people, even if it is not up to his own internal standard. To adopt a standard for defining the term impairment, other than comparison with the true norm, is like something out of Alice in Wonderland, where nothing is as it seems, and words can have whatever meaning one wishes to give them. Saying that a person functioning as well as, or even better than the average or typical population, can still be considered impaired, makes a mockery of the concept of disorder, and does a disservice to those struggling with really not being able to function as well as the norm. If the professional says you do not have ADHD, any of the following could be responsible for ADHD-like symptoms. Being over age 55, or perimenopausal, when increased forgetfulness, distractibility, and disorganization are normal. Recent medical problems, such as thyroid dysfunction, otitis media, or strep throat, though this particular connection is rare. Excessive recreational drug use, marijuana, alcohol, cocaine, methamphetamine, etc., which can result in attention, memory, and organizational problems. Unusual stress, though the ADHD-like symptoms would then be temporary. Injury to the regions of the brain responsible for sustained attention, behavioral inhibition, working memory, and emotional self-control. Any of these possible causes should have been uncovered by the evaluation, and the practitioner should refer you to the appropriate professionals to follow up on them. Step 2. Change your mindset. Know and own your ADHD. Having a diagnosis of ADHD is like holding a passport to a better life. It gives you access to medication that will help you concentrate, persevere, manage your time, and resist distractions that pull you away from what you want and need to do. Strategies for playing up your strengths. Tools that can help you compensate for weaknesses. Coping skills that will boost your success in specific arenas, from work to home. Support from peers and experts who want you to realize your dreams and reach your goals. The rest of this audiobook lays out your options for getting each type of help, where to go, what to do, how to use available resources. But that's just half of what you need to make treatment and support work best for you. The other half comprises knowing yourself and the ADHD that you have. And to know your ADHD, you have to truly own it. Accepting ADHD as part of your psychological makeup is what I mean by owning your ADHD. If you merely acknowledge the disorder at some distant intellectual level, paying public lip service to the diagnosis, but privately rejecting it, you'll be stuck where you are. People I've seen react that way don't embrace treatment. They've wasted time and money on the diagnosis and end up with the same struggles they've always had. I find, in fact, that accepting the diagnosis can be rather liberating for adults. They no longer have to play mind games with themselves or others, in which they deny, excuse, defend, distort, massage, or in other ways avoid accepting the disorder. I am bald, colorblind to reds and greens by about 60% or more, not well coordinated, cannot draw or paint a lick, am not very mechanically inclined or talented, am musically rather inept, now have to wear reading glasses, have nearly completely gray hair, what is left of it, find the remainder now migrating south into my nose and ears, and am developing a slow but progressive left facial weakness when talking, among other psychological and physical inadequacies I certainly possess. And I am fine with owning them, warts and all. Because when I decided to do so, my next thought was, so what? No one is perfect. Big deal. Now just own it and get on with life. I hope you can do the same. Get on with all the learning, loving, living, and leaving a legacy that a happy and productive life ought to entail. Happiness can come only from accepting yourself as you are, and that includes ADHD. Owning your ADHD doesn't have to demoralize you, because when you really own it, you too can then conclude, so what? Admit that you have it. Accept the diagnosis. Own it as you own other features of your self-image, and then you can really begin to work with and master it. If you haven't accepted that you have ADHD, you can't get all those things listed at the beginning of step two that should be the benefits of getting a diagnosis. Accepting your ADHD can lead to being able to seek help, discussing ADHD rationally with others, evaluating what types of accommodations, if any, you may need at work, school, or home, adapting to the condition, coping with it as necessary. In my years of counseling adults with ADHD, I've come to believe that reframing your view of yourself and your life to put ADHD in the picture is, in fact, among the most crucial changes you can make to master ADHD. It's the only way I know to keep ADHD from running or ruining your life. Unfortunately, accepting ADHD as part of you may be a tall order if you've been trying to explain your problems in some other way, or people have been telling you forever that there's nothing wrong with you, that you couldn't fix with a little willpower. Fortunately, changing your perspective on ADHD is not a single leap you need to make. It's a process. You start by coming to know it. Then you own it. And finally, you're able to work with it. 6. Know your ADHD. Let's start with knowledge about ADHD. Knowledge is power. Listen to this book. Try to commit to taking the time. Set a goal of listening to a chapter or number of chapters every day. If you have one, try setting your computer, BlackBerry, or wristwatch alarm to remind you to listen for 15 minutes at a certain time every day. Take advantage of the extra sources of information given throughout this book. Be skeptical. If you listen enough, you'll be able to decide for yourself what makes sense. The information at the end of Chapter 11 will help you become better informed without wasting time sifting through misinformation, exaggerated claims, and outright falsehoods. What goes wrong psychologically when you have ADHD? What causes ADHD, as far as we know, is neurological, in the brain, and hereditary, in the genes. Brain imaging technology is already showing differences in brain development in those with ADHD. We also know from genetic studies, such as studies of biological family members, and even identical versus non-identical twins, that the disorder is highly heritable. Studies have shown that you probably inherited ADHD. 10 to 35% of the immediate family members of children with ADHD also have the disorder. When a parent has ADHD, 40 to 57% of his or her biological children will also have ADHD. This means if you have a parent with ADHD, you are 8 times more likely to end up with ADHD than if your parent does not have ADHD. Now you can forget about what caused you to have ADHD. It's too late to change that. Knowing what goes wrong as a result of those causes, however, can help you target treatments and coping methods very specifically. Research that my colleagues and I did over a couple of decades showed us that ADHD causes a lot more problems than can be summed up by the 18 DSM symptoms. Those 18 are used by most clinicians to diagnose ADHD. And yet, we found 91 more that cropped up in a lot of people with ADHD. That certainly helped to explain why ADHD can be so hard to diagnose. But what did this abundance of symptoms mean? Now that we had identified them, how could we use this long list to understand ADHD better? My work and that of others has shown that all these problems seem to cluster together into 3 categories. ADHD appears to be a combination of poor inhibition, poor self-control, problems with executive functions. As you'll discover in the rest of Step 2, these 3 are interrelated. Poor inhibition leads to poor self-control, and problems with executive functions can produce 4 different types of self-control problems. I now believe that it all comes down to self-control. However, I think you'll find it easier to understand your own unique version of ADHD if you look at it within the framework of these 3 problem areas. Here's a sampling of the symptoms that fall into these categories. How many do you experience? Poor inhibition. Find it difficult to tolerate waiting. Impatient. Make decisions impulsively. Make off-the-cuff comments to others. Have difficulty stopping my activities or behavior when I should do so. Poor self-control. Can't seem to wait for a payoff, or to put off doing things that are rewarding now so as to work for a later goal. Likely to do things without considering the consequences of doing them. Likely to skip out on work early if it's boring, or to do something more fun. Start a project or task without reading or listening to the directions carefully. Problems with executive functions. Poor sense of time. Forget to do things I am supposed to do. Unable to comprehend what I read as well as I should be able to, after I read material to get its meaning. Get frustrated easily. This is just a sampling, but I think you can probably see from these examples that poor inhibition basically means you have difficulty stopping yourself long enough to think about what you're about to do. Without that pause, you can't exercise much self-control. Self-control means any response or set of responses that you direct at yourself and your own likely behavior that would lead you to do something different from what your first impulse would dictate. Think of inhibition as your psychological braking system. You put on that brake and slow down long enough to decide whether the intersection you're approaching is clear and it's safe to drive through, as well as just how effective what you are planning to do is likely to be. Self-control might mean coming to a full stop and waiting till the traffic clears, even though you're in a hurry and would like to try to drive around it. Executive functions are the specific self-directed actions that we use to control ourselves. They are the mental abilities that we all use to consider our past and then anticipate the future and guide our behavior toward it. Scientists divide them up and label them differently. But executive functions generally include abilities like inhibition, working memory, emotional regulation, planning, and attention. After inhibiting the impulse to act, we turn on these abilities during that pause. It's important to know that using these abilities takes will and effort. They are not easy and automatic. These executive functions help us decide exactly what to do when we exert self-control. Think of them as your steering wheel. The five areas of difficulty in managing daily activities. It's easier to see how thoroughly poor inhibition, poor self-control, and executive function problems can invade your life if you look at the difficulties they cause at the following five major areas. Quickly check off which of these problems you've experienced to get an idea of all the ways ADHD affects you. Problem Area 1. Poor self-management relative to time, planning, and goals. Procrastinate, or put off doing things until the last minute. Poor sense of time. Waste or mismanage my time. Not prepared for work or assigned tasks. Fail to meet deadlines for assignments. Have trouble planning ahead or preparing for upcoming events. Forget to do the things I am supposed to do. Can't seem to accomplish the goals I set for myself. Late for work or scheduled appointments. Can't seem to hold in mind things I need to remember to do. Have difficulty keeping in mind the purpose or goal of my activities. Find it difficult to keep track of several activities at once. Can't seem to get things done unless there is an immediate deadline. Have difficulty judging how much time it will take to do something or get somewhere. Have trouble motivating myself to start work. Have difficulty motivating myself to stick with my work and get it done. Not motivated to prepare in advance for things I know I am supposed to do. Have trouble completing one activity before starting a new one. Have trouble doing what I tell myself to do. Poor follow-through on promises or commitments I may make to others. Lack self-discipline. Have difficulty arranging or doing my work by its priority or importance. Can't prioritize well. Have difficulties managing my money or credit cards. If you've struggled with a significant number of these problems, it should be pretty clear to you that ADHD in adults is a problem with the ability to organize behavior over time to prepare for the future. How many of these problems? You may hear people on your treatment team call these deficits. Do you recognize in yourself? Do any examples from your own life come to mind? Problem Area 2. Poor self-organization, problem-solving, and working memory. Have difficulties with mental arithmetic. Can't seem to remember what I previously heard or read about. Trouble organizing my thoughts or thinking clearly. Forget the point I was trying to make when talking to others. When shown something complicated to do, cannot keep the information in mind so as to imitate or do it correctly. Dislike work or school activities where I must think more than usual. Have trouble organizing my thoughts. Have difficulties saying what I want to say. Unable to come up with or invent as many solutions to problems as others seem to do. Often at a loss for words when I want to explain something to others. Have trouble putting my thoughts down in writing, as well or as quickly as others. Feel I am not as creative or inventive as others of my intelligence. In trying to accomplish goals or assignments, find I am not able to think of as many ways of doing things as others. Have trouble learning new or complex activities as well as others. Have difficulty explaining things in their proper order or sequence. Can't seem to get to the point of my explanations as quickly as others. Have trouble doing things in their proper order or sequence. Unable to think on my feet or respond as effectively as others to unexpected events. Clumsy. Not as coordinated in my movements as others. Slower to react to unexpected events. can't seem to remember things I have done, or places I have been as well as others seem to do. Is this list all too familiar? Which problem struck a strong chord with you? You may know from personal experience that adults with ADHD have significant problems with organizing their thoughts and actions, doing so quickly and effectively, and thinking up multiple possible ways of doing things or overcoming obstacles they encounter in daily life. Problem Area 3. Poor self-discipline. Inhibition. Find it difficult to tolerate waiting. Impatient. Make decisions impulsively. Unable to inhibit my reactions or responses to events or others. Have difficulty stopping my activities or behavior when I should do so. Have difficulty changing my behavior when I am given feedback about my mistakes. Make impulsive comments to others. Likely to do things without considering the consequences. Change my plans at the last minute on a whim or sudden impulse. Fail to consider past relevant events or past personal experiences before responding to situations. Do not think about the future as much as others of my age seem to do. Not aware of things I say or do. Have difficulty being objective about things that affect me. Find it hard to see a problem or situation from someone else's perspective. Quick to get angry or become upset. Overreact emotionally. Don't seem to worry about future events as much as others. Don't think about or talk things over with myself before doing something. Have difficulty using sound judgment in problem situations or when under stress. Trouble following the rules in a situation. Not very flexible in my behavior or approach to a situation. Overly rigid in how I like things done. Accident prone. More likely to drive a motor vehicle much faster than others. Excessive speeding. Which of these problems are ones you struggle with? Can you think of a time when you've had to deal with these recently? Notice that these problems with inhibition apply not just to behavior, but also to thinking and emotions. This is why poor inhibition cuts such a broad swath through your life. If you can't stop your own actions, thoughts, and emotions to give time and self-control a chance to get any traction, you won't be guided to decisions that would be better for your long-term welfare. Problem Area 4. Poor self-motivation. Likely to take shortcuts in my work and not do all that I am supposed to do. Likely to skip out on work early if it's boring or hard to do. Can't seem to defer gratification or put off doing things that are rewarding now so as to work for a later goal. Give poor attention to details in my work. Do not put as much effort into my work as I should, or as others are able to do. Told by others that I am lazy or unmotivated. Have to depend on others to help me get my work done. Do not seem to get things done unless they have an immediate payoff for me. Have difficulty resisting the urge to do something fun or more interesting when I am supposed to be working. Inconsistent in the quality or quantity of my work performance. Unable to work as well as others without supervision or frequent instruction. Get silly, clown around, or act foolish when I should be serious. Which items on this list are familiar to you, and what types of situations? I suspect you know how tough it can be to persist when what you have to do is boring, takes a lot of effort, or is prolonged. If you can't motivate yourself, how can you persist? ADHD leaves you depending on immediate rewards or threats of consequences imposed by others. Problem Area 5. Poor self-activation, concentration, and alertness. Easily distracted by irrelevant thoughts when I must concentrate on something. Prone to daydreaming when I should be concentrating on something. Start a project or task without reading or listening to directions carefully. Can't comprehend what I read as well as I should be able to do. Have to reread material to get its meaning. easily frustrated. Can't seem to persist at things I do not find interesting. Have trouble staying alert or awake in boring situations. Easily excited by activities going on around me. Can't seem to sustain my concentration on reading, paperwork, lectures, or work. Easily bored. Which of the preceding problems affect you? How in particular? Adults with ADHD find it very hard to stay awake, alert, sufficiently aroused, and activated to sustain their concentration when things are not interesting to them, or there is no immediate excitement or payoff. My recent studies have shown that 89 to 98% of adults with ADHD report having major problems in the five areas of life listed previously, compared to just 7 to 14% of typical adults in the general population. Self-reports. Time management problems. Adults with ADHD, 98%. Adults in the general community, 8%. Poor mental organization. Adults with ADHD, 89%. Adults in the general community, 11%. Inhibition problems. Adults with ADHD, 94%. Adults in the general community, 7%. Self-motivation problems. Adults with ADHD, 95%. Adults in the general community, 9%. Concentration problems. Adults with ADHD, 98%. Adults in the general community, 7%. Reports of others who know the adult well. Time management problems. Adults with ADHD, 96%. Adults in the general community, 9%. Poor mental organization. Adults with ADHD, 84%. Adults in the general community, 7%. Inhibition problems. Adults with ADHD, 94%. Adults in the general community, 11%. Self-motivation problems. Adults with ADHD, 84%. Adults in the general community, 9%. Concentration problems. Adults with ADHD, 99%. Adults in the general community, 14%. These five problem areas created by ADHD in major adult life activities obviously pervade nearly everything you have to do on a daily basis. That they can severely interfere with your education and your functioning in your work ought to be very clear. But it's probably glaringly obvious to you how they have been interfering as well with your social relationships, including dating, marriage, or living with a partner. If you've been having problems with managing money, driving, or raising your children, you may now see how those abilities can be disrupted by ADHD. No doubt you can even see how these problems might deter you from taking preventive health measures and adopting a lifestyle that promotes your overall long-term welfare. These connections point to an inescapable conclusion. ADHD in adults is not merely a trivial disorder of paying attention. Instead, it's a problem with the ability to organize behavior over time to prepare for the future. The five problem areas in ADHD add up to an exceptional nearsightedness about the future. And that, as you probably know firsthand, is a recipe for disaster in most major life activities. What you will learn in the next three steps that can help you tremendously is this. The problems that ADHD creates for you have more to do with not using what you know at critical points of performance in your life than with not knowing what to do. Hold on to that thought. It's important not just to your understanding of ADHD, but to your confidence that you can improve your life, that you are not stupid, lazy, or just not paying attention. You know what to do. Let's see how you can learn to use what you know when you need it. 7. Resisting impulses. The first step in self-control. Why am I so easily distracted when I'm trying hard to concentrate? I know I was supposed to get that project done this morning, but I just couldn't seem to tear myself away from this great video soccer game I was playing with guys all over the United States. Now I am really in hot water at work. If I find something exciting, fun, or just plain interesting, I get completely stuck. I can't tell you how many times I've shot my mouth off without thinking, and wound up offending someone, or purchased things I thought I really wanted, even though I didn't have the funds to pay them off on my credit card, or just up and quit a job because I was bored with what I was asked to do that day. We all need to stop and think before we act, and stop is the key word here. Thinking before we act, so we can choose a wise course of action, starts with the ability to wait. If we immediately responded to everything that happened around us, we'd spend our days like human pinballs. Not responding to events that happen around us is critical to getting tasks done. It's the foundation of tact. It helps us make good decisions and become better and better decision makers over time. Dragged away by distractions. Here's a short list of activities that 30-year-old Dan said he found difficult, if not impossible. Reading. Doing paperwork. Attending a college lecture. Watching TV. Watching a movie. Having long conversations. Dan found reading more than a paragraph at a time almost impossible, because there was always something going on around me that distracted me. Whether it was a bird chirping outside the window, one of my kids walking through the room, or some tangent that my mind went off on when I read a sentence that reminded me of something else. Doing paperwork was even more painful. I can't seem to concentrate on such boring stuff for very long. Lectures? They were the worst, because I couldn't leave the class when I got bored, but I couldn't keep my attention on what the teacher was saying for very long either. Dan could watch a TV show that he really liked, but still found himself channel surfing across a lot of different programs, especially during the commercials. Dan's wife liked to sit and talk about her day after work, but Dan said he always had to be doing something physical, moving all the time or just being busy. Inside, he explained, I feel so restless, even if I'm not actually moving much. I just have this urge to be busy, or touching stuff, or playing with anything around me. It drives my wife nuts. Do you identify with Dan's list? What would you add to it? For most of his life, Dan has been told he doesn't pay attention. That never made much sense to him. He doesn't purposely drift off or just space out. Key to understanding ADHD is that many problems labeled simply as difficulty paying attention are actually problems with impulse control. It's not just that Dan and other adults with ADHD cannot sustain attention. It's also that they can't resist the impulse to pay attention to something else that enters their field of vision, or hearing, or thinking, whenever it enters that field. The problem isn't not knowing what to do, pay attention, but not doing what you know at the right time, which is to stop before going off on a tangent. Poor inhibition is a problem that develops very early in life in most cases, and remains a problem for adults with ADHD across their entire life. Parents, friends, and co-workers have probably been baffled by your inability to block out distracting sights, sounds, and movements for as long as you can remember. They can zero in on the task at hand. Why can't you? Do you perceive peripheral noises and sights better than other people? Are you more sensitive to everything that's going on around you? No. People without ADHD can stop themselves from responding to distractions. They do it so automatically that they're not even aware of having made an effort to do so. You, on the other hand, lack that off switch that could keep your mind trained on the task that's most important to you, the one you need to get done right now. Dan's problem activities also largely have to do with sitting still. Impulse control is highly related to the hyperactivity that is more common in kids than in adults. Notice that Dan says he feels restless inside all the time. He may now be able to resist the impulse to do somersaults in the living room while his wife is talking, an impulse he couldn't resist at age 10. But he does end up tapping his foot, fidgeting with the knickknacks next to him, or feeling so uncomfortably antsy that just trying to focus on his wife's voice makes him scowl with irritation. You can imagine how she interprets this reaction from her husband. Dan's wife might be more forgiving of his hyperactivity if she knew that the problem arises from poorly timed brain development in those with ADHD. The primary motor system of the brain, the part that gives rise to various and small motor movements, appears to mature too early in people with ADHD, and the higher-level brain center nearby, which gives us self-control and organizes our behavior toward future goals, develops too late, as shown in the National Institute of Mental Health, NIMH, study. This means that kids with ADHD have the neurological impulse to move around constantly without the brakes that tell them not to. As development proceeds, the fabulous learning machine called the human brain catches up a bit, and that's why Dan doesn't tumble around his living room as an adult. But it never catches up to the capacity of those without ADHD, and that's why Dan still feels that restless urge to do something all the time. Too quick on the trigger. Now look at 25-year-old Shayla's list of impossible tasks. Waiting in line. Staying silent when someone can't seem to get a move on. Waiting to make a right turn at a stoplight. Stopping talking once she's started. Saying she just can't seem to wait for things. Shayla has missed movies she wants to see because she can't stand in a long line. If several cars are in front of her at a red light when she wants to make a right turn, she just drives over onto the shoulder or the sidewalk, right up to the light, and makes her turn without waiting. When stuck in traffic, she usually rides the horn a lot to try to get people moving, even though I know it won't usually work. Where Dan notices what he doesn't get done due to distractions, Shayla's problems with inhibition are more about what she does do because she can't put on the mental brakes. Her driver's license has already been suspended once due to her risky driving habits. She has walked out on job after job, sometimes on the very first day, because she couldn't stand the boring parts of work or anything that involved waiting. In school, she was constantly being sent to the principal's office for being a motor mouth. And as an adult, she's often labeled a bore or an egomaniac, because she can't seem to resist monopolizing any conversation. As a teen, she couldn't stand waiting till she'd saved enough money to buy the little sports car she wanted. So one day, Shayla borrowed one, belonging to a friend of her father's. Fortunately, he refused to press charges when he reported it stolen, and the police stopped Shayla speeding along the highway in it. But things don't always end that well these days. She's ended up in shouting matches with strangers and alienated friends because she blurts out whatever comes to mind. People describe her as hot-headed, tactless, and just plain clueless or stupid. The truth is that emotional and intellectual problems also come into play in Shayla's unfortunate behavior choices. But the trouble starts when Shayla doesn't stop her immediate impulses. Do you identify with Shayla's list? What would you add to it? One-track mind. The same underlying problem that makes it hard for you to sit still and concentrate, or to think before acting, can, believe it or not, also make it difficult to stop what you're doing. All through school, people thought Jess just couldn't learn. He seemed to make the same mistakes over and over. He would stick doggedly with an effort that everyone around him could see was fruitless. Once he broke off a key in the door of his girlfriend's garage because, when it didn't unlock the door, he just kept twisting it until it broke. As an adult, he bent a corkscrew beyond recognition because he didn't notice as he tried to open a wine bottle that the metal wasn't a foil covering on top of a cork, but a metal cap in the cork's place. His neighbor once called the fire department when Jess let his backyard grill set a shrub on fire, because he was so immersed in mapping out a vegetable garden that he got distracted while grilling. When most people make a mistake in the middle of a project, an ingredient added to a dish doesn't have the effect the recipe said it would. Or the paint is almost gone, with only half the garage done. They tend to slow down and think for a moment about the mistake, and whether it means anything important. Mistakes often give us information about how we could be doing something better, or whether we should stop doing this activity altogether, at least for that moment. Adults with ADHD do not seem to monitor their performance of tasks as well as others, or to use mistakes they make to give them important information that could guide their actions in the immediate future. It's as if they start on a straight line and stay on it relentlessly, no matter the mistakes that may be piling up behind them. If what they are doing is particularly fun, rewarding, or interesting, many adults with ADHD may also find it hard to stop, even when they're not making mistakes, but need to get on with another task that needs to be done soon, but is far less interesting. We call this problem perseveration. Perseveration often looks like procrastination. But as you might know, it's not that the person has decided to put off something that isn't fun. It's that he or she decided to keep going on something that is fun. Do you identify with Jess's experience? Can you think of similar problems you've had? Poor inhibition can make doing any task feel like taking one step forward and two steps back, over and over. It can also make a poor impression on those whom you want to think favorably about you. Knowing this deficit is behind problems you may be having that are like those of Dan, Shayla, and Jess can help you stop beating yourself up. This knowledge can also lead you straight to ways to compensate that can make a world of difference. 8. Self-control. How to get what you want. I have no self-discipline. I have goals, but I never get them done. When things get even the least bit difficult, or I run into a problem, I just give up. My life is nearly half over, and I haven't been able to accomplish most of the goals I've set for myself. I'm as bright as most of the people I know. Sometimes I wonder if I'm just lazy, or don't care as much as others about getting important things done. One time a friend and I were working this construction job, and he said he was going to quit that day and drive from Wisconsin to Denver and just look for a new job out there. He had never been there, but had heard it was a cool place to live. So I said I'd go with him, just like that. No plans, no job prospects, no place to live. Nothing. And we both walked out and started driving. I mean, how stupid is that? Lacking self-control robs you of free will. This is one of the most tragic consequences of ADHD. You might think you're doing what you desire. Yet if you can't inhibit your behavior, you miss out on the delay between an event and your response. That delay is essential. It gives you the chance to think. Even more critically, that delay empowers you to choose freely. Len, the guy who spontaneously took off for Denver with a friend, might have felt pretty good, free and easy, when they set out. But it didn't take long for him to realize that ending up in an unfamiliar city, with no friends, no job, and no money, was not what he wanted. Had he taken a moment or two to think it over before acting, he probably wouldn't have gone. That's what I mean by self-control. The ability to choose something other than your initial impulse, so you can get something in the future that you want more, or that is better for your long-term welfare and happiness. Self-control is defined in psychology as any response, or chain of responses, that leads us to change our own behavior, instead of just acting on impulse, so that we can change what will happen in the future. It is action directed at the self, and toward the future. This capacity not to respond to events is much more highly developed in humans than any other species. A deer that smells smoke in the woods We'll probably run away from the smell without thinking. A person who smells smoke in the woods